tapestry weaves together the threads of our struggles and doubts, curiosities, our faith, our joys and hopes, to create meaningful conversations that matter. You know those late night conversations that go unexpectedly deep? That's what we want to capture with the Tapestry Podcast. And we want everyone to jump in the conversation. Because when we are heard and valued, we can begin to believe we are loved. Welcome to the Tapestry Podcast.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Tapestry Podcast. My name is Haley. I am here joined by Mwangi and Mike. Say hello, friends.
What's hey, everybody.
Up? That's both of them. And today we are continuing on our series of nostalgia. I lost the word for a second. Of nostalgia. And today we're going to be... That should not have been as funny as it was, but it was. And this is going to be our final episode on nostalgia. Today we are going to be talking about the intersection of nostalgia and faith. And in our faith background, that is the Christian church, I'm pretty sure, for all three of us.
Yep, and, true.
Yeah. So, what have you...
Why don't you start, Haley?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we're going to start with the question of what things are we nostalgic about for church? And
at least spiritually, right?
Spiritually.
Yes.
And my first thought when we were kind of planning this episode was Vacation Bible School, which
VBS.
Yeah. If we have any listeners outside of our small circle, VBS, Vacation Bible School, is pretty much like a week-long, like, day summer camp for kids, where you sing songs about Jesus, and you play a lot of games, and you do a lot of crafts. And that is something that was filled with a lot of good memories for me as a kid. And even into my youth days, where I was no longer, like, a participant, some of my most fun days at VBS were... I was in charge of preschool games when I was in high school.
Nice.
So yeah. I would plan a lot of games for little preschoolers, and it was so fun. So yeah, I think about that a lot. Because the current church that I work at, we don't have enough kids to do like a VBS. We don't really have the resources to do that anymore. And so I know when they talk about it, like, it's a very nostalgic conversation, because they used to be able to. That church has been around for 150 years, so... It's seen its fair share of VBSs that it no longer has. So that is not something I've been around for quite a while, actually. So, yeah. What about you guys?
I can go. It's like youth group stuff, like especially youth retreats or like summer camp kinds of things that we'd go to with youth group, road trip stuff. And it's an interesting relationship for me because that's actually what I still do. So I just got back from last weekend with, at a winter camp, in Larkspur, Colorado, and it snowed and everything. And we like almost didn't make it because of the snow. They closed I-25, like a major interstate in our area, to get down there. We took dirt roads to get there.
Oh my gosh.
And I think about, so this nostalgia for me is also something that lives very much in my present reality.
Yeah, I think it's cool. Like, for me, nostalgia, I know we talked in this podcast a lot about music, right? For me, you know, I'm self-taught, and my main reference is a United Methodist hymnal. I know that hymnal very well. That's how I learned music, right?
Wow.
Yeah. And so from a nostalgia perspective, and I have many hymnals here as an earmark, you know, like starting from songs easy, like, you know, Jesus Loves Me. But what I'm trying to say is, like, nostalgically, if you ask me, like, about church music, it is centered around the hymnal. However,
that's cool.
That is not of many modern churches today, right? So
come to
my
church, Mwangi.
It's true, right?
Like, we use that hymnal every week.
Yeah, you know, the hymnal. I'm not trying to say, like, it's not collecting dust necessarily, but you know, you can find many people who are, Mike's in my age, 25, who may say, like, they didn't grow up They have no idea, like, some of these songs, right? So, Haley, mm-hmm. like, to your point, like, you volunteer at this church, you hear these songs. That is atypical.
I work at
that
this church.
That is atypical, morning. Right? Exactly. That's atypical, right, yeah. for somebody in your age at yeah. a church versus listening to contemporary Christian music, which in itself has some old school, right? Mm-hmm. There's, like, some old school CCM oh my. Stuff.
Yeah, all
Forget
of our,
about hymn, though, right?
If you we're know? Singing praise music, we're singing 2000s, like... Blessed yeah. be the name. Like, that's where we're at, you guys.
So
Broomfield is writing original music, and we're here singing.
That, yeah. Heard about that?
So, yeah. So, like, as I'm saying, like, nostalgia, it's for me, like, that's the first reference I could think about when you guys were chatting, is about, like, some of that stuff and, like, where you are in the spectrum. Again, the spectrum, like, on if I come to a church, like, what hymnal are they using? What instruments do they have? Like, is it an organ? Is it just a piano? Mm-hmm. Is it like a full band that I need to bring earplugs with me? Right. That's kind of nostalgically. So for me, therefore, if you ask me if I am having a bad day or you just like, I want to go to the piano and play certain songs, I hearken back to many things that are in that hymnal. Less so.
Mm.
Some of the contemporary stuff. I'm one of those people, I feel like some of the old school stuff has, it's not better, but the words hit harder than some of the more modern stuff. So you can call me a nostalgic person, like, oh, no, you love the hymns. But I feel that that's where I'm at with music. And that's my example.
That's really cool, actually. I didn't know that's any good. Of that. That's really neat.
That's really good.
Because I take, like, I'm at the point, like, because I work at this church, like, I'm so surrounded by hymns all the time that, like, I kind of take it, like, not for granted. I wouldn't say that's the word. But we're like, constantly in this process of trying to modernize where we're at so we can continue growth. Because COVID hit this church really, really hard. And so...
Yes.
We're really trying to grow and we're seeing progress, but a lot of the feedback is, hey, like, we have younger families coming in. We need to make it more modern. And so yeah, I think it's,
that's fair,
but that's given me a little bit of perspective, to be honest, about
yeah, for me,
just like
yeah,
what it can mean yeah. to people. Cause sometimes yeah. I'm like, man, you've heard this hymn. Like, you've sang it here for 50 years, dude. Like, let's sing.
And we always
else.
Sing it on this Sunday of the year. And
right.
Yep.
But
exactly.
Maybe they look forward to it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think too, it could be the reinterpretation of some of those hymns.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I'll just pick one. Like, the idea of, like, the old rugged cross, right? What a wonderful title. Like, the old rugged cross, right? Some of the, right?
And it's a good song.
Right? Like, I'm just saying, like, if you play... classically that song on an organ, it will be the exact same thing every single time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My challenge would be, how do you modernize the old rugged cross such that that new family that comes in, Haley, hears the words? Yes, you can add the rhythm, right?
Right.
You know, but here's this idea, is like, an old rugged cross. Like, tell me more about that. Why is it rugged? Why is it a cross? Like, what's going on there, right? Like, what... How is this writer depicting what's going on? And so that's why my point is, I am less so on the repetitive nature of playing classically what those songs are, and about saying, like, yeah, let's play like old rugged cross in like 3/4. Like,
how do you reimagine?
Who wants to take
it?
The solo? Yeah. How do let's we do it? Like, how do we do it instrumental with the bass taking the melody line, right? Or like, you know, like, how do we, you know, Mike, you preach, right? How do we make old rugged cross be the sermon theme for the next 6 weeks, right? That kind of stuff, right?
Six?
Six I think weeks. There's a, you know,
it's Lent.
You can preach for 6 weeks in a row, Mike. Come on. Anyway, so that
I,
for
I
me,
never
nostalgia
have.
Comes. Well, okay, Don, this is your challenge. But yeah. You can go on tell Don to go on vacation for 6 weeks. You can
all right, Reverend.
That's my point. Anyway, so, you know, again, long story short, like, for me, the nostalgia comes from the hymnal, that United Methodist hymnal, and many of those songs, and trying to struggle through those songs to get me yeah. to where I'm at today with music.
You do bring up a really good kind of point on the lyrics and the words and kind of the intentionality people used to put into that. Like, one of my problems with modern Christian music is it feels very shallow. Mm-hmm. Not all of it, but
yeah, but so some of it can. Yeah,
it's made like, I feel like right now a lot of it is made to be sung in mega churches by a worship band. You know what I mean?
It's kind of like a Jesus is my boyfriend feel.
And so for it to have a deeper meaning, to be more connected to art, mm-hmm. this is nothing new to nostalgia, but just a thought of just
how sure it is though.
Music is in worship. Yeah.
I mean, music in church is very much connected to how we see the past. There's a great quote that talks about how, you know, this modern music with these modern instrumentations that are coming into church are ruining everything. And I don't have the quote in front of me. If I'd thought about it ahead of time, I would have found it. And really, you know, this new like artificial instrumentation is really dangerous, and it's probably from the devil. And what they were talking about was the pipe organ.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Not electric guitars, not keyboards, not synthesizers, not drums. They're talking about the organ. And so it's always been a thing where we say, oh no, music was better in the past when it was this way. And now it is worse when, you know, whatever, or maybe it was a cappella, right?
True.
So
they tried to do an interval. The devil's
the devil's chord. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we do this in churches where we look back at some, you know, Vacation Bible School, the hymnal, youth trips. Those aren't necessarily bad things, but there are things that we can hold on to within our faith traditions that I think hold us back. And maybe you guys have seen this, like whether it's a particular decoration in a building, or like a way of doing things on a certain time of year. I mean, we could probably fill the next 20 minutes
with stories. 20 minutes about
easily, right? We could buy, you know, 2 hours of it. But it reminds me of this quote that I shared two podcasts ago from Richard Rohr. It says that religions tend to idealize and protect the status quo or a supposedly wonderful past. Yet what we now recognize is how often what they're really doing is they're focusing on protecting their own power and privilege. But God does not need our protecting. And this line is so great. We often worship old things as substitutes for eternal things. We worship the old instead of worshiping the eternal. And he's so good. He's so good. And I think go ahead.
I always substitute the word old with institutions. We worship mm-hmm. institutions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Part of them are old because we feel like when something has lasted for a long time, somehow it has merit. And, mm-hmm. you know, you should be loyal to such a thing, right? And again, you know, mm-hmm. the other episode I was talking about, Chris Rock talking about like artists and longevity. I'm not dismissing this idea that you've lasted a long time, you know, that doesn't count. But we, you know, to your point, Mike, on the old, I think it's institutions. And therefore, we tend to question new things and less so the old things. Because we feel that the reason the old things have lasted is because somehow they're more righteous or better. Mm-hmm. When if we were to dig in, coming back to the nostalgia thing, it's like, how did these institutions last for so long? What prompted them? What propelled them to power? And then once they got there, how did they sustain that power?
Yeah.
As opposed to anything else, right? You could look at the Reformation or look at the church itself and say, the church is powerful. It is. The church has been powerful historically. You can insert whatever church you go to, but historically the church has a asserted power over communities, civilizations, politically, and things like that. So you know, nostalgic. So how does the church get to the point where it's exerting such power? Is it the spirituality? So does Haley, Emperor Haley, come to, you know, Friar Mike for advice, and therefore Haley, you know, acquiesces to Friar Mike's advice? But at the end of the day, it's Emperor Haley who has all the power, right, and Friar Mike is just there to reinforce what they're saying. But all this perspective, though, you know, it doesn't feel good, right? So we don't like to look back in the past, whether to childhood or to my hymn. Because here's the thing, in my hymnal, guess what I did? I picked out the ones I like the most, right? I love the ones I like, the hymns I like the most, I earmarked. I folded that page. I'm like, yeah, this is good. And then, or at least like, this is the one I want to practice. When I used to volunteer for hymn sings, right? Mm-hmm. Hymn sing is when folks at a church will gather, and then everybody that comes will have a hymnal, and they get to ask the musician what to play. Guess what they're going to ask you to play? Their favorites, right? It's like a top 40.
Old Rugged Cross.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Old Rugged Cross. Somebody's going to pick Old Rugged Cross, but nobody's going to pick, right, some other unfamiliar hymn, right? Or they'll say, why didn't Mike pick this hymn, right? Sometimes I'm in the choir, I'm like, why? I've never heard this hymn before. Why would Mike pick this hymn, right?
Yeah.
Things like that. Anyway, we love what we love, right? Just one more story. I was traveling with a teammate, and we listened to the radio, and she was like, oh, I don't know this song. I was like, why? Oh, I've never heard this song before. I said, well, what do you mean? And so we started talking about like Taylor Swift or something like that. But I was just like, but every hit you like, so any song you like, you heard it for the first time. And when you heard it the first time, my bet is you didn't like it the first time. But what happened is you listened to the radio enough and they pushed it enough that it started getting into your psyche and that became normal.
Or you associate it with like experiences or the people you were with or any of those.
So you didn't like it the first time. And so this idea of like, no, I just want to listen to the songs I like. You didn't know them beforehand, right? Or like this idea around tradition. What is tradition? Tradition, I don't believe
it started once.
It started at some point. Some dude was like, yeah, let me do this. And then after a while, people were like, yeah, that sounds cool. And then after people did for 10 years, all of a sudden it became tradition. Every tradition was new at some point, right? Every song was new. Every writing, every poem, every whatever was new at some point. It was an original. So sometimes we may nostalgically look at things and feel like they've always existed forever when that is not the truth.
Yeah.
That is not the truth.
Yeah,
at not least man-made only is it not things.
Well, yeah, right. And not only is it not the truth, but like we've talked about in past episodes here about nostalgia, what did exist in the past may not be as good as we remember it to be, or we only have what was the best from the past. And so we forget that there was actually a bunch of trash then too. And when it comes to kind of spirituality and how we live in community with one another, this is, I think, really, really important, because whether it's music or whether it's any of these other things that we look back and idealize, the big problem is that we then imagine that somehow, like for Christians right now, that there was a time when the church was in its glory days, and it is not now. It was sometime in the past. And we either have to try to find some way to get back there, and we have to strive for that, or we have to believe that like it's all over and things are terrible. And I don't think that either one of those things are true. And we can go a few different directions with this, but this might be a really great time to talk about the Great Awakening. Have you guys heard of the Great Awakening? So you're nodding, Mwangi, and Haley is not nodding. Yeah. What do you know about the Great Awakening, Mwangi? What would you?
I'm
putting
you
on the spot. I'm sorry.
Say,
no, I'm happy to explain it. So,
go ahead.
In the United States, there have been a number of Great Awakenings. There are these times that Christians talk about that, like there's a renewal of the movement of God's Spirit in the land, and people go from, you know, wayward sinning to church going, you know. The first Great Awakening happened in the 1700s. And depending on who you ask, there have been four Great Awakenings, right? So first and second and the third and the fourth, 1700s, 1800s, 1900s, kind of these happen over and over again. And I have heard Christians talk about like, oh, you know, we need to have another Great Awakening. We need to like, you know, come back to Jesus as a nation and whatever. But what you forget is that means that this idealized Christian nation that we imagine the past to be was not, right? For there to be a Great Awakening, there has to have been a time when a large portion of the people, right? Maybe even like most people had no interest in the church or Christianity or Jesus. That means that back in those times, in the 1700s, the time that a lot of people will be like, oh yeah, that's when we were a Christian nation, when the founding fathers were doing this, right? Or the 1800s or the 1900s, like, no. We were sometimes kind of a Christian nation and sometimes apparently hardly at all. Mm-hmm. And yes, we forget that, especially people who talk about this as a Christian nation or a nation founded on Christian principles. Like, maybe sometimes sort of during some brief periods, but
for who though, Mike, right? That's the point. From an awakening, who's awakening, like who's mm-hmm. waking up, and then who's being put asleep forcefully, and then who's writing the story, right? So you can say like, oh yeah, like I had this epiphany and I'm part of this awakening. Who's excluded from that, right? Who's mm-hmm. excluded from that? Like, okay, you get awakened. What kind of people are invited to your church? What kind of people are invited to your kitchen table to dine with you? What kind of people are allowed to marry your family if it's so awakened, right? So, you know, your point on awakening, there's those periods, and even like maybe secularly, semi, like you look at prohibition where the country says, oh mm-hmm. yeah, like this is a sin. We'll stop drinking alcohol because this is what's going to bring us back to mm-hmm. purity, et cetera. So I'm not sitting here saying
that. Third Great Awakening, by the way, that would have been right.
Right.
In the middle
of that. I'm not sitting here saying like that, oh, like whatever your views on alcohol, that's not my point. But collectively, it was this idea, right? Mm-hmm. You know, being pure, et cetera. And of course, that didn't last for a long time. It was an attempt mm-hmm. at that, right? But, you know, and here's the thing. Part of this is like, I can critique, but I realize us humans have, you know, it's a trial and error kind of thing. So you're going to try, you have this notion and you're going to try to get back to whatever it is you're talking about. So like that trial, but I think what you guys are talking about is this honesty around exactly what framework you're trying to calibrate yourself against. To decide, mm-hmm. have I gotten there? Right. Yeah. So to your point on the awakening, Mike, right? You have these iterations. Mm-hmm. So are people going, oh yeah, we got it. Now we're awakened. You wake up one day, you're like, you know, Mike, are you awakened? Yeah. We're good. We're good.
I'm awakened.
We've reached this state and let's high five each other mm-hmm. and then let's chill for the next 20 years because we finally found awakenism. Right.
Awakenism.
Awakenism.
If that's
is that
the,
what woke that, is? Sorry.
Ooh. Well, that's a funny thing, right? Like I hear Christians being like, oh, that's just woke. And I'm like, you realize like one of the primary tenets of like your whole outlook on life is that our country needs to reawaken to like, I don't.
Just not like mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. But that's
wake up
crazy.
And not there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not like
to
that.
Those things.
Not to that alarm.
Well, I think that's where like, this is one of the dangers, right? Is that when we don't really know what the past was like, when we just have this idealized idea of the past, when we don't know the actual history of our country, then we can easily believe lies. We can be duped into thinking that there was some time in the past when this was like a Christian nation and it was all the way up until these bad people got in power. And so we need to remove them from power so we can go back to being what we were in the past when we never really were that in the past.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it right now.
And when I, and like when you're saying like great Christian nation, my question to that is in numbers or in practice, because all the times anyone's like, oh, we're like, we are a great Christian nation. If they could ever provide an example, I have a feeling it's not actually following in any way that Christ would expect or want. And so
is the idealism around the awakening or whatever, I feel like it's, there's always an enemy. I am awakened against somebody else, right? Because part of it is like, it's still defined around, right? I am awakened, therefore you are not, therefore you are tainted or evil or whatever, right? It's never solitary. It's never this idea of like, I have reached nirvana, but that has nothing to do with you, right? It's personal. Yeah. But many times the way we couch this idea of being better or more, you know, sanctified or whatever is it's against something else, right? It's against something else. And I think that's a, I mean, I don't think that's a problem. I'm going to tell you that's a problem, right?
Yeah.
Yes,
when,
it is.
When you define it as spirituality.
Yep.
I mean, we could debate that, right? This idea of like, you know, good versus evil. Does good exist because evil exists and things like that, right? Or, you know, do you do good because you feel like that's better for you? Evil can exist in the way it exists, but you're not really every day waking up talking about like, I'm here to conquer evil. But within this awakening, within this, you know, paradigm we're talking about, there's always this other people. And the way I feel pure about myself is to say that at least I'm not them, right?
Yeah.
You know, even in today's society, politically in the U.S., it's about like, well, what about those other people, right? How do we figure out those? How do we like stop those other people from doing whatever they're doing? Like, you know, you talked about like, you know, this debate around trans athletes and. I don't care where you are on that, but what you can't convince me is that there's 3 million of them infiltrating all your sports, right?
There are nine in the NCAA
So that's my point. So what I'm saying is like, we can have a conversation about what your beliefs are, but this idea that they're taking over.
And they're coming for you.
Yeah.
They're going to get your kids.
Right? Becomes this. Right, so it's like it becomes
the quarterback
this, like,
is more threat than
swimmer. Like, yeah, like, you know, so it's fine. Again, like we can have that discussion, but this idea that these people are taking over, at least like that's the thing that we need to be focusing on, and that's the quote unquote boogeyman. It reinforces the things and it props up, I think, a false, like this idea of like one nostalgia, because you know, we want to get to the point where these people didn't exist.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Yes.
Even though, if you look in literature or antiquity or whatever, there's no such thing. People have always existed, right? So what do you want to talk about, like, right? So it's this, like, weird, like, dissection, that, like we were talking before in the other episodes. Like, you take history and you just say, like, yep, no. I'm going to ignore that whole thing and I'm going to choose to promote this and say this is the ideal. And I'm sorry to say that this will never stop, right? I don't want to be like defeatist and like be like pessimist, but we're human beings and I think this is us. And like
we might move on from one topic, but another topic will come up. And what I'm hearing is that like, we're always going to have something to wish to go back to. And I say we, I'm kind of meaning, I don't know, let me back up. People will use religion or faith as a backfall, like a way to cover up their biases, their hatreds, simply because it's easy to do so. And there are going to be a lot of people who will do the same thing with them.
Yes.
And if you quote, if you say, oh, it's sacred in the Bible, people who don't know anything about the Bible can't refute that, and they're not going to listen to the people who can.
Correct.
Yeah.
But I guess what it is like, that's always, like, that's such an easy way for us to fall into, like, if we're talking about trans people, right? And trans people have always existed and will always exist, but they want to find comfort in the, and that's what nostalgia is kind of the bottom line that we've kind of gotten to in all three episodes, is like, nostalgia is where we feel comfortable.
And yeah, so, and finding comfort in some imagined past.
Right, and religion and faith is the incredibly easy way to do that, because a lot of people grow up in church, and so you are surrounded by this ideology, this belief system. Most people don't break out of that. If they're still in it in adulthood and they are continuing it, they aren't looking to break out. A lot of people do break out in adulthood, but not, I wouldn't say most. Yeah. Is that, do we feel like that's a fair saying? I don't know. But we feel, if we are in our religion for long enough, we feel comfortable there, which is why it feels so nostalgic. And so when we have things in the secular world that contradict or fight or make us uncomfortable, we seek that comfort of the church. And I feel like that's, I mean, I think that, you know, we know that religion was used as, what is the word I'm looking for? But
panacea or like,
what was it? It's literally the historical thing when they took land. They took land in the name of Jesus.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So you're talking about like the conquistadors and stuff like that, or you got
everybody, anybody who used that, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was before back into that.
Yeah, certainly
maybe
before that, right?
Nostalgia. But even, like, but even now, right? We say like, this is our land, right? Whatever. This is God's given land.
Yep.
Was it? I don't know. Yeah. But we kind of lay into
these.
Daily.
Depends on
who
you ask.
Who I ask.
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
A lot of our like God-given whatevers fall into this. Like we think they're we. I'm not sure. I'm not sure the three of us fall into this we, but I will just say we for the sake of easy. That we fall into these non-negotiables almost because it's.
But it's safe
and easy.
Yeah, and exactly. Safe. Exactly what you just said. Like. It's a lot safer, especially if I can reference a book that and say, like, the book tells me. It's not about what I feel. Mm-hmm. I don't have to think, oh, well, the book tells me to do
and
this.
Then overlook and that man wrote book.
Yeah. And just
right.
Like,
and we ignore the context that the book was written in to begin with and the people who put it together. And one of the things that I came across as I was preparing for this is there's this great Hebrew Bible scholar named Walter Brueggemann, and he's top notch. And he talks about how I may have to set this up a little bit. There was a time when the people of Israel were conquered by Babylon, and some people were taken from Israel to Babylon into exile. And those people were actually probably kind of like the elites. They brought just the best to like work in their, you know, in their country. And so they probably had kind of a skewed view of what Jerusalem was like. And so when we read these passages that are in the Bible, who are written by people in exile in Babylon, we're not getting a 100% honest, authentic, unbiased view of Israel, of Jerusalem, of the whole situation that was going on there. And so he's got this quote, it says, excessive nostalgia for a past that never existed will lead to violence against those who have taken us from what we falsely remember, as in, make Jerusalem great again. Walter Brueggemann.
No. Legit.
So when you see things like in Psalm 137, it says like, happy are those who seize the infants of our enemies and dash them against rocks. And we're like, ooh, I don't like that.
Yikes.
You have to remember that this is from people who have a kind of a skewed view of what they had left and what they would return to if they were allowed. It's like we tend to think of the good old days as being in the past, but like, what if these are the good old days? And that's kind of this whole idea. Like, one of the questions that I wrote as we were preparing this was like, can we take off our rose-tinted glasses and stop seeing the past as something that was better than now? Like, what if actually now is pretty good? And I'm not saying that it's great. And I'm not saying that there are not things to fight against and to fight for. But what if we could have a more accurate view of what's in the past? I don't know why I'm looking to my left.
left means past, right means
past for, in a time. Yeah, in a timeline. That's how in English how we read left to right.
Yeah, exactly.
And have a more accurate idea of what was actually in the past, so we don't idealize it, so we can appreciate what we have now, and then like move into the future in a way that is like honest with ourselves, honest with our God. Like, if you're a spiritual person, you believe there's just something more than the physical world, maybe even that there's some sort of divinity that holds us, that cares for us, whatever you call that thing. I call that thing God. Would God want things to get progressively worse? I know that there's some Christians who say, well, look at Revelation. It's like, well, it depends on how you read Revelation, number one. But I don't think that's God's actual plan for us. I think God actually wants things to get better and better for us. And we have to let go of things in the past in order to hold on to what we have now in the present. And I don't know all the answers on how to do that, but I'm pretty hopeful about being able to find ways to avoid the traps of nostalgia in order to live more fully in the present.
Yeah, two thoughts I thought about when you guys were talking. First, there's a great Bob Dylan song called God on Your Side. What you just talked about, right? So you said, like, would God, right?
Mm-hmm.
The way we is like, well, God's on my side. So my God, my God would want me to do this. You see, my God tells me anything I do is righteous, right? So I am anointed and therefore I'm good, right? Right? So I think it was it's a great point. And then it also made me think about this another book by this theologian named Reinhold Niebuhr called Moral Man and Moral Society. You know, and whether that book or many other things, you know, it speaks to this idea of like, I may be a moral person or I make good choices by myself, but get me in a mob. All of a sudden,
that group,
how I act can be very different, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how I move with the mob versus how I move individually. And therefore, you know, the way religion has moved over time, part of it to me is reflective of moral man and moral society, where I may have a bunch of questions, but once I'm in this group, I diminish myself to be part of the larger group. And essentially, if the group is doing wrong, I am less likely to challenge the group, right?
Yeah.
Because me being part of the group is emotionally like fulfilling, right? Mm-hmm. And I can also simultaneously remove myself from the group by saying, well, it's the group that did it, not me.
Yeah, yeah. Right? It's a dangerous thing, man.
Right? Yeah. So like this balance, but living outside of the group is not comfortable, right? So, you know, part of this nostalgia too can be influenced by that group you ran, you know, where you grew up, you know, like, well, you've been in Haley, like you were talking about, like as you age, maybe you have questions and things like that. But you know, it could depend on a bunch of factors, on like who you are as a person, where are you bereft from? Like if you were not surrounded by positive influences, then you tend to want to be part of a group, right? And feel whatever that, you know, like if those who study gangs say the same things, right? Gang members feel very protected by gangs because they do not come from loving households. And truly, like, you can argue me again, like, I'm not saying gangs are positive, but those gang members feel love from their gang mates.
Right.
Or at least feel some reciprocity or some, you know, like from their people. And so it becomes this like my, you know, like this little community. Anyway, so Mike and Haley, like those two things, you know, made me think about like this idea of like yourself versus this larger group, right? And how that fits in and whether, I'm not saying you have to rebel, but I think that self-reflection on who are you outside of this group, I think should be an evaluation relative to this nostalgia, right? So like, where's, when I talk about this nostalgia, have I ever been there? Do I even know anybody that's lived back then that I want to go back to?
Yeah.
Is it a book that I read or is or is it?
Is
it
a movie? What is there that is not here now?
Is it a movie? Yeah. Did I watch Gone with the Wind? And that's my idea of antebellum South.
Antebellum, yeah, yeah.
Right? That's it. And that's my reference. Okay, like.
That it is for a lot of people. Yeah.
You know, so like, what's that reference? But it's tough, man. Like, you don't, it's not easy and you have to self-reflect. So anyway, yeah. We can keep going on about this subject forever.
Guys, any final thoughts on ways that we can avoid the nostalgia trap of over-idealizing the past so that we can also avoid thinking that now is worse than it is?
Just ground yourself and find the joys of now, right?
Like, yeah, that's
things
good.
Are pretty bad right now. Things are pretty bad at a lot of times. So, like... Mm-hmm. Find your joys as small as they are, because small joys are big joys too. So that's what I got.
Love that. Love that. That's so good.
I think what I'm saying is aligned with that. You know, some of the, if you're launching a startup, one of the things that you read in literature is to talk about like, yes, you have an idea that's going to work, but you should also exercise on why it's not going to work. Because sometimes you can come in saying, I have the greatest idea in the world. But part of the exercise also says, like, what are the limitations in today's market that may not allow me to succeed? If I want to build a flying car and nobody wants a flying car, like, how do I do that? So it's aligned with what Haley's saying, too. So what I'm trying to say is, like, check yourself, too, in saying, I have this belief. What are the things counter what I say? And it doesn't mean I consume them wholly, but I'm aware of them. And I'm, right, I'm... So, you know, I'm just aware of them and I hear them and I calibrate myself against them.
I think mine would just be kind of a practice of gratitude, kind of like what Haley was saying, and focusing on the things that are so good in my life. There are, I mean, I've got friends who are suffering right now, and even they are finding ways to have joy and laughter in their lives. So it may sound super trite and super like cliche, but count your blessings. Like, spend a little time at the end of the day. And I just say, these are three good things. I've got a friend, Ryan. Ryan Gunderson, you might be listening even. he does his best to think of three good things that happened every day. And for me, I've started doing that too. So thanks, Ryan, for that tip. And maybe not just today, but you can expand that. Like, what are three things I'm just grateful for in my life? You can usually find three. Thanks, guys, for this conversation.
Awesome. Yes.
Thank you.
And we'll see you guys. See you next time, everybody who's listening or watching. And can't wait to talk about some more deep stuff. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Y'all be good.
The Tapestry Podcast is produced by Stephen Bailey. Original music was scored by Taylor Martin. Our hosts are Haley Bird, Wangi Ndonga, and me, Mike Orr. Special thanks to Lauren Richmond Jr. and Resonate Media. You can learn more about Tapestry and join the conversation on our Discord channel at tapestrytalk.org. Thanks for joining us.